History, Mrs. E. Quote, "There are 5 cases in which rape took place in hypnotic sleep and under the influence of suggestion, and a theft on the large scale which was effected solely by the instrumentality of suggestion. A person who gave himself out as a doctor and hypnotized an ailing woman was able to suggest her handing over to him a fairly large sum of money on which he was able to keep his clutches." End quote. Janae, Psychological Healing, page 312. In the past, writers have always called her Mrs. E. I call her Anna Evan. It isn't her real name. Her real name is unknown. When this all began in the 1920s in Germany, Anna was not yet married to Mr. Evan. She had only just met that nice young man. Mr. Evan had a steady job as a minor government official and had begun to court her. The criminal hypnotist's name was Franz Walter. But she knew him as Walter Bergen and by other aliases. Later, under rehypnotization by a police psychiatrist, Dr. Meyer, Anna relived her years of hypnotic victimization. One day she tried to explain to Dr. Meyer how life as a conditioned, chronic, hypnotic subject had felt. "I'm no longer the same person as before. Something different controls me. I don't want to do something, but I do it. Or I want to do something, and yet I don't do it. In the end, I thought of nothing more than doing what Walter wanted. If I obeyed, I always felt more at ease. Within me, I was never free. There was always something oppressing me. I can't struggle against these pressures. The pressure vanishes when I obey the commands of the inner voice." Mrs. E. quoted in Hammerschlag, Hypnotism and Crime, pages 120 to 121. When it was all over, she had been the unknowing hypnotic subject of Bergen for 7 years, the wife of Mr. Evan for 4. During those 7 years, Bergen extorted thousands of dollars from her, used her sexually, sold her services as a prostitute, compelled her to attempt murder on her husband 6 times, and caused her to attempt suicide several times. Anna Evan, a naive farmer's daughter, age 17, was riding a train to the city on the day it all began. She intended to find a doctor there who would help her with a minor stomach problem. She traveled alone. Perhaps it was her first solo trip, granted because she was a sensible girl with good values. It can be assumed that she felt rather proud, an adult, to be traveling alone to find a doctor and get treatment. Anna found an empty train compartment, entered, shut the door behind her, and seated herself on one of its pair of facing seats. Shortly after, a man opened the door and seated himself opposite her. Without so much as a "do you mind," he introduced himself. "Bergen." She nodded and turned away. Nothing that I have read about her tells how she looked, so I must imagine that. I think she was almost beautiful, but her nose a little too broad for perfect features. I think she had sky blue eyes and thick brown hair, worn long and loose under her demure traveling hat. Anna wanted to watch the lovely German countryside roll by outside the window, but Bergen pursued her with questions in a lively and friendly manner. She was reluctant to talk to a strange man, but felt obliged by her polite upbringing to answer all his direct questions. "Where are you going?" he asked. She told him. "What is your purpose?" he asked. She explained her intent to find a doctor and be treated for her stomach ailment. It might be assumed that she felt rather proud and adult to be traveling alone to seek a doctor and receive treatment. "How fortunate we have met," the man said. "I noticed the moment I came into your compartment that you were ill. For you see, I am a nature healer, a homeopath, Dr. Walter Bergen. My office is in Crossroad, Dax Landon, and yours is just the kind of illness that I can treat very well. When the train stopped to take on coal and water at Graben, Dr. Bergen invited Anna to join him in the station for a cup of coffee. She demurred, for he frightened her somewhat. He insisted, however, jovially picking up her traveling bag and carrying it out the compartment door. She stood up and followed her suitcase. He picked a table for them in the railway station restaurant and ordered coffee for Anna. He made small talk while they waited for the beverage. The waiter brought Anna's cup of coffee and walked away. Dr. Bergen suddenly seized her hand and stared into her eyes. He was channeling so much mental command through that gaze that, after a moment, Anna felt as if she no longer had a will of her own. She felt so strange and giddy. Bergen's shocking hand grab plus stare technique may never before have elicited such a quick and profound induction response as Anna's. He probably was secretly delighted and amazed at his success. Actually, he had merely lucked on to a genetic somnambulist, 10 to 25% of the population. Bergen had accomplished a first induction. He probably now considered the delicious long-term possibilities of controlling this young woman through trance, and did not let this opportunity escape. It can be assumed that he next pushed her deeper into trance, deep as he could. Then he suggested post-hypnotic amnesia and a post-hypnotic reinduction cue. Whenever I say, Luxatorb, you will immediately return to this deep trance state, and you will never remember what happens in this state. Perhaps he brought her back to a waking state, then reinducted using his cue several times. That training would have strengthened her conditioning, for each reinduction usually causes a subject to go deeper. He gave further post-hypnotic instructions, telling her to obey either verbal or written orders from him. He would use this means to cause her to come back to future meetings with him. He also gave hypnotic suggestions that her stomach would no longer trouble her. He collected the money that she had brought to pay a doctor. Bergen was not a real doctor. Bergen was not his real name. He was a genuine con artist. He could have been reading books on hypnosis for years. Europe of that era had hypnosis texts aplenty. A scholar named Max Dessau had published a bibliography of modern hypnotism listing the numerous books on hypnosis that were published after Mesmer first focused public attention on this subject. Many books were in French, but some were in German. In 1888, Dessau listed 801 titles. By 1890, there were 1,183. Many authors discussed the possibility of abuse of hypnotic subjects, even of crime caused by suggestions under hypnosis. Over the next 7 years, Bergen often instructed his unknowing hypnotic subject to meet him at the train station of Karlsruhe or Heidelberg. He would then hypnotize her, lead her where he chose, do with her as he wanted. He gave Anna suggestions to act in a way that would appear normal to other persons, waking hypnosis, although she was hypnotized and amnesic during those visits. The doctor angle was very profitable for Bergen. It is possible to cause paralysis, muscle cramps, and every sort of pain by hypnotic suggestion. Over and over he gave Anna psychosomatic ailments. Some of them were very painful. If paid what he demanded, he then cured her by releasing the previous hypnotic suggestion that had made her sick. One time he instructed her, "All the fingers of your left hand, except the little finger, will become stiff. You cannot move them anymore." Hammerschlag, page 107. Bergen's suggestion was cloaked by amnesia from Anna's conscious mind, so after he was done with her, Anna did not know why she could not unclench her left hand except for its little finger. No matter how much effort she exerted, it remained shut tight. That painful, inconvenient condition continued for months until her family gave her the money to pay Bergen's past bill and hire him to renew her treatment. When she at last was able to pay, Bergen pretended to massage her hand until she could open it, and he counteracted his previous suggestion that had caused the clenching. Once her hand could open again, she saw that the growing fingernails had bruised and inflamed her palm. Bergen then splinted and bandaged her hand. After removing the splint, her hand still felt so tired that she could hardly use it. Mr. Evan remembered that incident, too. He told Dr. Meyer, "For about 8 to 10 weeks, my wife's hand had a cramp. It was impossible to bend her fingers. Another time, for 14 days, her hand was so firmly locked that the inner side was all bruised as a result." Quoted in Meyer, page 182. Anna learned to bring Dr. Bergen every dollar she could get. If she did not bring money, he would subject her by post-hypnotic suggestion to dreadful new pains. Entranced by Dr. Ludwig Meyer, Anna later exclaimed, "Now I know where all those pains came from. Sometimes I didn't bring money because I couldn't get any from my parents or my husband. Then Walter would say, 'You will get so ill that they will prefer to pay.' After that, I got the most awful pains, which only vanished when he took them away by magnetic stroking of me." Meyer, page 131. Bergen also used Anna sexually, free for himself, and in paid service to other men. He also shared his mental access to her with friends. If one of them spoke Bergen's post-hypnotically designated Q-word to her, rapport temporarily shifted from Bergen to whoever had spoken that word. Bergen's friend then could use all the powers over her that Bergen had developed. One of Bergen's friends began frequently to participate in her hypnotic exploitation. It took a long time, but Mr. Evan finally began to voice suspicion of Anna's doctor. The husband had acquired private evidence that her treatment included sexual encounters, of which his wife seemed completely unaware. When Walter Bergen realized that Mr. Evan was changing from a convenient supplier of cash to pay Anna's doctor bills into an active threat, the healer began to give Anna hypnotic suggestions to murder her husband. Bergen tried 6 times. He failed 6 times. The failures were partly blind luck or the grace of God, but also due partly to Anna's unconscious resistance to this most heinous suggestion. She described all 6 murder attempts later under Dr. Meyer's rehypnotizations in the presence of her astonished husband. First, Bergen told her, under hypnosis as always, that she would go to a drugstore and buy a poisonous chemical used for furniture cleaning. She would then add that poison to Mr. Evans' food. When she got home, however, Anna was gripped by such a mysterious, extreme excitement that her concerned husband would not allow her to leave the house to go shopping. Since Bergen's hypnotic instructions had been specifically cued for enactment that particular evening, putting them off until the next day disempowered the urge. Bergen's second murder scenario was a shooting. He instructed the hypnotized woman, "When you get home, you will take the Browning out of the desk and hide it in a more convenient place. When your husband is sleeping, get the gun, draw the safety catch, and pull the upper barrel back. Hold the pistol at his temple and press the trigger. Then place the weapon in his hand so that it will seem that he had committed suicide." Bergen's hypnotic command sequence had omitted an important detail. Anna did take the gun out of the desk. She did hide it in a handy place. While her husband slept, she did get the gun. She released the safety catch as instructed, and she pulled the upper barrel back. She held the pistol to her husband's temple and then pressed the trigger. But the gun was not loaded, so her husband was unharmed. The next time Mrs. Evan was compelled to meet Bergen, she told him her husband was very upset and was seriously considering going to the police. Walter then came up with a third plan. Give him mushrooms, he ordered. Cook harmless ones for yourself in one pan. Cook poisonous ones for him in a different pan, the type with a red skin. Consciously ignorant of the murder plan, Anna cooked the two types of mushrooms. She served herself the non-poisonous ones. She gave her husband the poisonous ones. He swallowed two spoonfuls, then left the rest on his plate because of their disgusting taste. 2 hours later, the poison took effect, stomach pains, diarrhea, and vomiting. Anna had no idea why her husband was sick. She gave him some mint tea. After a while, he felt better. The next murder failure definitely was caused by Anna's unconscious fighting of Bergen's commands. The hypnotist had given her a package of white powder and instructions to slip the powder into her husband's coffee. He warned her that the powder would cause a little bubbling in the coffee and that she should take precautions so Mr. Evan would not notice the effervescing. As she was traveling home, Anna took the powder out to look at it. Then she accidentally spilled most of it. That evening, obeying the post-hypnotic compulsion, she put the remainder in his coffee. Even that little caused him severe stomach pain. He went to the doctor for treatment. When Meyer hypnotized Anna, Mr. Evan was present every session. He was so astonished during her hypnotic regressions and recall of these murder attempts that he could hardly stay calm. He confirmed the history of each incident, at last fully explained for Dr. Meyer he had indeed been sick after the 2 teaspoons of mushrooms and after that cup of coffee. Bergen tried again, switching to a different, even more deadly method of hypnotic manipulation. He changed from direct murder instructions to an indirect, deceitful presentation of those instructions. He now gave Anna instructions under hypnosis, which he claimed would keep her husband safe. Mr. Evan rode a motorcycle. It had a handbrake and a footbrake. Under deep hypnosis, Bergen told Anna to cut the handbrake's cable because that would force Mr. Evan to use the footbrake, which was less dangerous. He then instructed her to turn the screw of the foot brake several times to the left. He explained that turning the screw in that direction would tighten it and thus keep her husband safer. Anna objected. She knew how the mechanism worked. Walter said, "Your analytical powers are disappearing. You must do exactly as I say." Then he repeated the full set of commands again, plus his reassurances that obedience would protect her husband. Anna carried out the 2 acts. Mr. Evans sat amazed, listening to his hypnotized wife tell all this to Dr. Meyer. Now he understood the why and how of those strange brake failures on his motorcycle. He told Meyer what had happened next. "One evening I drove together with a friend on my motorcycle before the railway barrier. I was dazzled by an oncoming car, so I believed that I was still far from the barrier. When the vehicle dimmed its lights, I noticed that I was only 20 meters away from the barrier. I immediately pressed the foot brake, but it tore through, so I quickly pulled the handbrake, but that also tore through. Then I wanted to switch to first gear, but in the excitement went into neutral, drove into the barrier and crashed. Both I and my companion were injured." Quoted in Hammerschlag, page 111. Though his plan had failed again, Bergen was encouraged by having come so close to succeeding. After Mr. Evan was well enough to ride again and his motorcycle was back from the mechanic shop, the hypnotist gave Mrs. Evan the same set of instructions again. Mr. Evan had another motorcycle accident. Both brakes tore through again. He was perplexed because both brakes had just been repaired. When his motorcycle crashed, this time he was riding alone. His arm and knee were injured, but he lived. Frustrated by all those unsuccessful murder suggestions, frightened by Mr. Evans' reported thoughts of going to the police, Bergen now began giving suicide commands to Anna. First, he told her to obtain a prescription from her doctor for sleeping pills and to swallow the whole bottleful the first night she possessed them. She asked her doctor for sleeping pills. However, he refused to give the visibly upset woman a prescription. At their next meeting, she told Bergen she had not acquired the tablets. He then, quote, made me feel dreadfully upset. He said I would die in terrible torment, that my whole blood was becoming pus. He said it would be better if I would kill myself rather than suffer through that death. He advised me to jump off the train when it was moving, but only when I was alone. He said such a death would be painless. I was convinced and firmly decided to carry this out on the way home because I believed myself to be terminally ill. But on the train, I got into conversation with an elderly lady to whom I confided my misery. She comforted me and drove away the thoughts of self-destruction. Quoted in Meyer, 1937, page 106. Anna had chosen to converse with the old lady. Almost anybody you discuss suicide with will attempt to comfort you and drive away those thoughts. Anna's unconscious let them be driven away. Another suicide set up by Bergen was evaded. The hypnotist did not give up. On Anna's next visit, he suggested that her husband loved another woman and wished to divorce her or somehow get rid of her. In fact, Bergen said over and over to Anna in his hypnotic urgings, her husband was secretly trying to kill her because he was in love with that other woman. In fact, Mr. Evan had not considered leaving her, nor did he have an affair. Because of her husband's imaginary betrayals, Bergen said that she would drown herself in the Rhine River. On the way home, Anna did feel utter despair. She made plans to drown herself in the nearby Rhine River. Her unconscious saved her this time by finding a way to alert the housekeeper to Anna's state of mind, and by picking a time to carry out the command when the housekeeper and several other persons were around. The housekeeper observed Anna's depression, followed her, and restrained her from drowning herself. Anna obviously had a problem. Up to this time, however, only her unconscious and Bergen knew the real source of the terrible pressures on her. Mr. Evan demanded again and again that she tell him what was wrong. Anna could not tell. She did not know what the problem was. She did not know that Bergen reinforced his amnesia commands with threats to destroy her if she betrayed him by revealing anything to her husband. If she had consciously known what was going on, she would have reacted immediately and correctly. But her conflict was all unconscious, hidden from conscious understanding, prevented from resolution by the amnesia. Mr. Evan was married to Anna during the last 4 years of her hypnotic abuse. At first, he had no idea unethical hypnosis was involved in her situation. Fortunately, he never doubted her sanity, and he gradually realized her true situation. Mr. Evan tried, but he could not track down Bergen on his own. Because of amnesia, Anna did not consciously know when she was scheduled to see Bergen, what his real name was, where she met him, or where he lived. Walter Bergen was right to fear Mr. Evan, for he finally went to the Heidelberg Criminal Police Office for help in solving the tragic mystery in his wife's life. He went in 1934 toward summer's end. He reported that his wife had been duped out of nearly 3,000 marks. He said the perpetrator was a man who had told Anna that he was a doctor and who had given her hypnotic treatments for various health problems. He said the doctor used several names, all false. Neither he nor Anna knew the hypnotist's real name. Every effort he had made to discover the true name and address of the hypnotist had failed. He told them that he also suspected that the hypnotist had sex with his wife while she was hypnotized, with neither her knowledge nor consent. After hearing what Mr. Evan had to say, the police called in a psychiatrist, Dr. Ludwig Meyer, the most respected medical hypnotist in all Europe. Dr. Meyer did not believe that unethical hypnosis was possible. In his previous writings, he had always promoted the dogma of moral integrity, that it is impossible to completely annihilate a subject's will by hypnosis. When Dr. Meyer examined Anna, he found no sign of any underlying illness, mental or physical. Mr. Evan assured the doctor that his wife did not have sickly relatives, was not sickly in her childhood, and had never had mental problems. A series of other psychiatrists and neurologists at the Clinic for Women, the University of Heidelberg's Nerve Clinic, and the University of Freiburg Psychiatric Clinic also examined Anna. All agreed she was not mentally ill. On all topics, except events having to do with Bergen, her memory was normal. Her only mental abnormality was that she could remember nothing having to do with the hypnotist. She had forgotten everything. She was, however, able to tell Dr. Meyer the induction cue which Bergen used on her. Bergen would put his hand on her forehead. She would feel dizzy for a moment and tired. And then came the amnesic abyss. Dr. Meyer asked Anna's permission to hypnotize her. She gave it. The psychiatrist then used Bergen's induction cue, the hand on Anna's forehead. If a hypnotist who is attempting a rehypnotization uses the same induction or deepening routine as the former hypnotist, deliberately or accidentally, progress will be substantial. The first time Meyer put his hand on her forehead, Anna went into trance, but it was only a light state. Perhaps Bergen had given her ceiling and depth-limiting suggestions. However, Meyer kept repeating Bergen's induction cue. Gradually, Anna's trance deepened. After several sessions of just repeating Bergen's induction cue, Meyer had this natural somnambulist deep enough for hypnotic regressions. But she still could not remember. Bergen had threatened her unconscious with the worst he could think of if she broke his amnesia rule. If she remembered forbidden information and betrayed his secret, he had warned that she would fall dead. Her father would die. She would endure everlasting damnation in this life and hell in the next. Dr. Meyer found it slow, tough going to fight those fear-based unconscious amnesia commands and recover Anna's memories. Bit by bit, however, the memories did emerge. Meyer's first priority was to identify the predatory hypnotist. He suggested that Anna would hallucinate the hypnotist's face. She did. Bergen's rules, which had made her unable to remember his face, did not cover a request to hallucinate it. She described that hallucinated face to Dr. Meyer. The psychiatrist carefully recorded her description and turned it over to police experts. They noticed that Anna's description matched the face of a man called Franz Walter, who had just been arrested in a nearby town for pretending to be a doctor. They put Walter in a lineup and brought Anna in. She identified him as the man she had met on the train, the man who had seized her hand and stared into her eyes. Walter, of course, denied everything. They locked him up anyway. Dr. Meyer continued searching Anna's memory. One day she visualized for him a letter from Bergen containing instructions to come and meet him. At Meyer's suggestion, she saw the exact words of the letter as a positive hallucination superimposed over the blank whiteness of a piece of real paper he had handed her. Anna held the blank page up before her, peered at it, and read, "I order you herewith to be in the station at Heidelberg on the 18th of this month, where I shall expect you at the exit at 4 o'clock. Dr. Bergen, destroy this note." Hammerschlag, page 106. Another day she relived him, taking her through the streets to an unknown place. She had walked with her eyes open, but unable to see anything because of his suggestions that she was blind. He took her to a room, continuing to make those suggestions that she was blind. He told her to lie down. He said, "You are receiving treatment. Sleep quietly. You know nothing of what has happened here, and you will not know later either." At this point, Meyer's hypnotic subject began to shake her head in a physical gesture of no, no. As she relived this event, she made pushing away movements with her hands. She began to cry softly. After she awoke from the trance, Anna explained to the doctor, "Now I know. Through the hypnosis, I suddenly know." She sobbed on and on. For a long time, she could not stop crying. Dr. Meyer made good use of the memory recovery technique of association, following the verbal or imagery linkages in Anna's unconscious memory. The result often was some new fact about the criminal hypnoses that Anna did not consciously remember. Meyer chose the cue words from what Anna already had remembered. For example, after Anna recalled being with Bergen in a swimming pool, Meyer asked her to think of swimming pool and then described the next image that came into her mind. Anna said, "I clearly remember a white Turkish towel. It has light blue stripes at the top and bottom. I also saw a towel with lilac stripes at Walter's." The police searched Bergen's room. They found both towels. Dr. Meyer also obtained cue words by hypnotizing Anna, then telling her to say every word or thought which came into her mind, not regarding whether it made sense to her or not. Her unconscious grabbed this opportunity to provide evidence on Bergen without breaking his not-know, not-remember rules. It produced a string of incriminating clues. Shoe, Schumacher, 5 mark, Otto, 6071, Kumbaris, and so on. When Anna looked at the list of the words which he had said after waking up from hypnosis, none of those words and phrases made any sense to her. Under later hypnosis, however, when Dr. Meyer asked her about those cue words one by one, Anna was able to associate to them. When Dr. Meyer said, Schumacher, 5 mark, Anna associated, "Walter bought the yellow shoes in Speyer at the shoe shop. He left his old shoes there, and besides that paid another 5 marks. Police checked it out and confirmed the accuracy of her memory. 2. Otto, 6071. She associated Bergen once coming to get her in a car with that license number. Police established that Bergen had once borrowed a car with that number. The day that Dr. Meyer said Kumbaris to her and then asked what she remembered was a bad one for Anna. She had instantly plunged into the midst of an intense experience of hypnotic reliving. She is sitting with Bergen in a hotel lobby. Another man walks up to them. He is a bank branch manager named Mr. B. Bergen talks to Mr. B. and tells him that Anna will satisfy him. Mr. B. hands Walter 20 marks, which Walter pockets. Mr. B. leaves. Bergen keeps Anna sitting there a while. They are alone now. He puts his hand on her forehead. It is his usual cue, used both for induction and for deepening of a trance. He presses and says, "Now, with no will of your own, you will do anything the man asks you to do. You will remember nothing of what happens. You will think of the word kombaris and then go into such a deep trance that you can no longer remember what happens to you or where you have been. A female servant with strange, brightly colored hair comes and leads Anna away from Pimp Bergen, saying that she must go to Mr. B. After awakening from that chain of memories, an agonized Anna discovered that she could now remember more. She told Meyer, "Walter did this often. Every time he said the word kombaris, I lost my willpower. Until today, I knew nothing at all about this. You must think I'm a terrible person, but I'm not a slut and not a bad person. Right now, I just want to go straight into the river and drown myself. I'm so ashamed." Meyer learned that Bergen often used cue words such as kombaris as a first step in activating a complex sequence of post-hypnotic suggestions in Anna's unconscious. Bergen would tell the hypnotized woman that, under certain circumstances, she would think of the cue word. She was further instructed that thinking of the cue would then cause her to carry out some further command or commands. After 6 months of daily sessions questioning Anna under deep hypnosis, Meyer discovered that more than one hypnotist was involved in her abuse. That information did not come out under hypnosis. In January of 1935, Mrs. Evan mentioned to him in a normal conversation that she had encountered one of the criminal police. Anna said the policeman had insisted that she give him extensive information about her case. She had done that. The incident sounded improbable to Dr. Meyer, so he double-checked. He learned that whoever he was, Anna's questioner was not a legitimate policeman. Logic suggested it was Bergen, but her description did not fit Bergen. Dr. Meyer then questioned Anna, under hypnosis, about the mysterious event. She identified the impostor as one of Bergen's friends, Alfred. She remembered that Bergen had told her under hypnosis to comply unconditionally and without any will of your own with Alfred's wishes if you hear Alfred say, "Philophy." Dr. Meyer learned that after Mr. Evan began talking to his wife about talking to the police, Walter and Alfred had planned ahead for that possibility. Their plan was for Alfred to manage a private encounter with Mrs. Evan, drop her into trance with the cue word Philophy, and then give her instructions. She would, as usual, have complete amnesia for both the encounter and the suggestions. By this means, Walter and Alfred intended to cause great confusion and difficulties for the prosecution during its questioning of her. It required 19 months of daily hypnosis sessions, each hours long, for Meyer to recover the complete details of all Bergen had done to her from Anna's unconscious. The police had obtained physical evidence which corroborated her recovered memories. There would be a trial. Before the trial, Dr. Meyer demonstrated to court personnel how it was possible for Bergen to share with Alfred his hypnotic control of Anna. Dr. Meyer hypnotized her. She went into a deep trance. Meyer did not give a suggestion that she would obey only his voice. Meyer's assistant then said to the hypnotized woman, "You will immediately become hypnotized if I say 10. Meyer brought Anna out of hypnosis. His assistant began to count aloud the pages of a manuscript which he held. When he said the number 10, Anna's eyes closed. She was again in a deep trance. The case went to trial in June 1936. Like Adam at Zebediah's earlier trial and like Nielsen at Powell Hardwick's later trial, Walter Bergen insisted that he was innocent, totally ignorant about hypnosis, and had never hypnotized the alleged victim. Like Adam and Nielsen, Bergen secretly tried to manipulate his subject's court testimony using hypnosis. Unlike those cases, however, he failed. One reason he failed was because Dr. Meyer stayed with the case and continued hypnotizing Mrs. Evan. In trance, she remembered another of Bergen's cue words, "Lasst bino." Bergen had said, "If you start to reveal anything in court that could harm me, the word Lasst bino will come to mind. Then you will feel sick and will not say anything against me. You will only speak in my favor." The trial lasted 3 weeks. Bergen was sentenced to 10 years in prison for larceny and for practicing medicine without a license. Alfred was sentenced to 4 years. Meyer and the German police did everything right in this case. They even kept Mrs. E.'s true identity private. I hope that she and Mr. E. were able to live out the rest of their lives in peace and security. However, that was 1937. Next came World War II. In his post-verdict German-language book about Mrs. E.'s case, Meyer detailed 21 previous European court cases which dealt with crimes caused by post-hypnotic suggestion, including Zebediah's case. He warned the public of the risks of being hypnotized, quote, "A person in somnambulic hypnosis is not able to take up a critical attitude on his own behalf. Subordination to the hypnotizer and dulling of his consciousness takes place regardless of whether he is the subject of a legitimate experiment or is being hypnotized for other purposes. Just as suggestions can be employed therapeutically, they can equally well be used for criminal purposes." End quote. Meyer, 1937, page 53. His book was enthusiastically reviewed in the German press. It was much discussed by criminologists all over Europe and became a bestseller in the European nonfiction market. It was never translated into English, but an English researcher who read it in German called it, quote, "without doubt the most authentic and carefully documented example of the use of hypnosis for criminal purposes," end quote. Edmonds, page 145.